God ordains leaders in our lives and in the world. And it says that in Romans the 13th chapter, that every person be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God. They who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? That's what we call anarchy. That's what we have from coast to coast right now. It's not a good thing. Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger, for those who bring wrath upon the one who practices evil. Those are the rules that God set down. Our nation, not everyone that was a founder of America was a Christian. I want you to know that. Even Thomas Jefferson was not a Christian according to a Christian standard. He was a deist. He believed that there was a deity, but God basically created all things and then left things to evolve the way they are. He believed that he was a great minister in the hand of God, though, to bring to the world democracy, the Democratic Republic, a Jeffersonian Democratic Republic. We come down to the 8th President of the United States, as I've said in the past. Not every president we had was a good man. We talked about Andrew Jackson and the viciousness that he showed to the American Indian people, that he was a gambler, a drunkard, but he was also a hero. He did good things for America. He tried to do good things for America. He tried to protect America with constitutional rights. He tried to stay within the Constitution. He mistreated the American Indians horribly. And he will always be known for that. But he won one of the only battles that was fought against Britain in the British-American War, or the War of the 1812. He whipped the British socks off there in Louisiana, in New Orleans, the Battle of New Orleans. He was a man that would give his life for what he believed in his country. That's what we need now. He was not looking for what he could get. I remember one of our great presidents that was cut off by malicious hands. John Fitzgerald Kennedy said, ask not what you can do, what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. We're not to him yet, but that man served America and would not take a salary. Just like President Trump did. He would not take a salary. Not very many men believe like that. John Kennedy's family were very wealthy. He didn't need the money. He wanted to do something for America, and he made mistakes too. He was a man of many mistakes. But what he was trying to do for America was straight up. Now we come to a little man. His name was Martin von Buren. He was the first president up to this time that his native language, his birth language or his home language was not English, but Dutch. Dutch. He was born December the 5th, 1782, and lived till July the 24th, 1862. He was an American lawyer and statesman. When he first went to law school, they told him, you know, you got to... He was wearing homemade clothing and dressed not the best, not to honor his party or his family, they say. So he finally went out and bought some tailor-made clothes that look a little better. He was the founder of the two-party system and of the founder of the Democratic Party of America. He was the eighth president of the United States from 1837 to 1841. He was the eighth vice president of the United States from 1833 to 1837. He was the 13th United States minister to the United Kingdom from 1831 to 1832. He was the ninth governor of New York from 1829 to 1829. He was there from January to March when he became part of Johnson's cabinet. Jackson, that is. He was a United States Senator from New York from 1821 to 1828. He was the 14th Attorney General from 1815 to 1819. He was a member of the New York Senate from the Middle District from 1813 to 1820. He was a surrogate of Columbia County in office from 1808 to 1813. His religious beliefs were the Reformed Church. His religious beliefs were, he was from the Reformed Church or Protestant in his beliefs. His political affiliation was the Democratic Republican Party from 1799 to 1825, the Free Soil from 1848 to 1852, and then Plain Democrat from 1825, 1848, 52, and 62. He was married to one woman from 1807 to 1819, Hannah Holst, which was also Dutch. He had five children, Abraham, John, Maria, Alan, and he was educated in Kinderhook, New York Academy, and then Washington Seminary. Some of these nicknames were Little Van, Old Kinderhook, the Little Magician, the Sly Fox, and the Red Fox of Kinderhook, and Martin Van Ruin. Martin Van Ruin. He is also called Maddie. He believed in a two-party system. He believed that America ought to be ruled by two parties and they ought to be balanced out. And we're having a problem with that today, aren't we? Definitely. The Democrats are going for a one-party system. Period. With no opposition. He was involved with political machines. He was involved with the Tammany Hall of New York also. Now, this is not all good. But he used different parties and different forces to bring about things that he thought were good for his country. The man wanted the best for America. His family had migrated to America, and he wanted the best for this country. He wanted freedoms. He wanted a sure foundation in the country. He wanted a sure constitution. And he wanted the people protected from big government, because he knew that would be a problem. And so in many ways, he tried to curb government intervention, and yet he wanted to encourage government intervention. One thing that he always did in his life, he was under the Free Soil Party. He believed that slavery ought to sooner or later phase out. And he was always against slavery. His family did not believe in slavery, so to speak. One thing that he continued to do that he inherited from Andrew Jackson was the Indian Removal Act. The Indian Removal Act. Now, I want you to understand something. America has a very black past when it comes to or a very dark past when it comes to the American Indian. The African slaves were abused in many ways, and they were brought here. Van Buren wanted to send them off into a colony and move the slaves out of America so there would not be any conflict between ex-slaves and whatever. Now, during this same period of time here, we have a band by the name of Cassius Clay that lived in Kentucky. And Cassius Clay was fighting for Emancipation Proclamation. He wanted all the slaves freed, and he fought hard. That man fought more duels, and he even killed a man when they tried to rob his house when he was 89 years old. Cassius Clay had more, what we might call, duels than any other person in American politics, even more than Andrew Jackson. Van Buren, like Cassius Clay, wanted the slaves freed. But he wanted to send them off into a colony. James Monroe, called Monrovia. Send them someplace where they can be free and rule themselves. He fought the Second Seminole War. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the Seminole War. Black slaves that escaped went down into Florida area in the what we call the Everglades. Indians, the Cherokees, the Chickasaws, the Creek, many of the Indians went down into Florida just to be away and be free and to live their lives in freedom. Now, America, from coast to coast, when the Anglo-Saxons came here, it was democracies from coast to coast. There were conflicts between the Indian democracies, but Indians were democracies. Everybody voted. You talk about, you hear about Indian princesses and Indian kings and all that. There was no such thing. England tried to make a man in an Indian tribe to be a king or a chief. Chiefs came up and they went away among the American Indian people. My family on the Chickasaw side has chiefs all the way from 14, I can trace it all the way from 1400 AD. But no man was a chief among the Indian people unless he was worthy of it. He was a chief as long as he stood for his people, not for himself. It had to be selfless. And I think that's why presidents ought to be too. Women voted. Girls? Amen. Women voted, women went to school among the Indian nations, and they were educated. Now, the Indian Removal Act by Andrew Jackson, they were not taking wild land from Indians. The only Indians that were very nomadic were the Plains tribes, and yet they had areas where they lived. And there was natural forests and natural crops where they went. Nuts and different things, wild turnips, whatever, and the buffalo. They mainly lived off the buffalo. But in the western and the eastern part of the United States, we have great colonies of Indians. with great farms and great, the Great Plains were created, they didn't happen. American Indians burned the whole plains area off and made great buffalo grazing grounds. The Great Plains were manufactured by the Indians. When the white man came to this land on the East Coast, at nighttime, from far as they could see to far as they could see, from horizon to horizon, was lit cities. They were great orchards. They were great farms. They were great crops. They kept trying to take the land from the Indians. The American people that came here from Europe, they would have starved to death if it wasn't for the Indians. The American Indian gave corn to the world, gave potatoes to the world, gave tomatoes to the world, squash, beans, and many other things, chilies, all types of melons, even pineapples. These were the contributions of the American people that were genetically engineered. There was about 300 or 400 kinds of potatoes. The Cherokee Indians had developed corn, unbelievable varieties of corn. And they had great plantations all over the Northeast through even to the Midwest. When the American government started to settle what they called Manifest Destiny, they came in and they took over the great plantations in the South and in the Northeast and the Northwest. They took them over. Plantations, big homes, crops, fields. Now, one of the great crops in America was tobacco. Tobacco completely depletes the land. It completely depletes the land. So they would build a plantation, they'd farm, they'd plant tobacco. The Indians were planting corn, and they were planting cotton. The white people were planting tobacco and depleting the soil, and so they could only live there so many years, and then they had to move on and move on and move on, and they kept wanting to move on into the fertile ground of the Indian culture. Because they had fertilized the ground. The Indians knew how to take care of the ground. Now, I'm not taking off on a rabbit trail here, because you have to understand what happened. Andrew Jackson, they said, wanted to move the Indians into Indian territory so he could protect them from being killed. But he was going to take away tremendous great farms in doing so. The Cherokees, the Chickasaws, the Creeks, the Osage, these people were agricultural people. They hunted, yes. They used wild game as their meat source. But they also had animals. There was turkeys here in America, all these bison. Oh, there's enough bison in America to feed every Indian 5 meals a day if they wanted. And corn, melons, beans, cantaloupes, all of the things that we take for granted today that were not of European origin. Europe was starving to death with barley and wheat until they came here and the Columbian Exchange took place. They brought disease and we gave food to the world. Now, Andrew Jackson said he wanted to move the Indians into an area where they could be wild Indians. The 5 civilized tribes are not the 5 tribes of the 5 wild Indians, people. That's the ones he removed. Some of them went down in Seminole, down into Florida, and they were called Seminole, and they were a conglomeration of Indians and blacks down there. And later on, they call them Cajuns also. They went down there to live their own lives. Everything had been taken from them. Well, Martin Van Buren went ahead and started the costly Second Seminole War. Just leave them alone and let them be. But he didn't want to. If you weren't on a reservation, you were a wild Indian, you were to be killed. And that happened out here in California with the Catholic Church, too. Catholic Church had one slave plantation after another. They called them the Mission Trail. All slave plantations. They used Indians for prostitutes, for concubines, you might say. And there's hardly any pure white Indian blood in California because of all of the priests impregnating them and either neutering or killing their husbands if they didn't become slaves. And all of you maybe have heard of the last wild Indian in California, Ishi. You read that book, it'll tell you a little bit about his family being killed. Indians were big game in Florida and in California. Big game. They can shoot back, you know. That's a real dangerous game. Well, they went down there and they tried. He went ahead and pushed the Indian Removal Act. And under this man we have the Trail of Tears. Now, he didn't believe in slavery, but there were more Indian slaves than there were more black slaves in America ever. They trained bulldogs and bloodhound crosses to go down and kill the Indians and the blacks and the Seminole because they couldn't whip them. Matter of fact, the Seminole War was never won. They never made a treaty with America. That was a dark history of him with the Indians. His own niece says, "Uncle Marty, I hope you don't ever become president again because of what you've done to the Indians." He was trying to do what was best for America, but you know what? Us Indians are Americans. They could have done it a lot better, people. They took the most educated, civilized Indians and absolutely displaced them and put them into a wild land with Indians that were nomadic and Indians that were what we call the horse Indians, the wild Indians. My family were part of that in the Cherokee side of my family, the Chickasaw side of my family. All of those were part of the Lakota, the Dakota, and even the Ojibwe part of my family were pushed into Indian territory. That's how I got all becoming an Indian mongrel. But I am 132nd Scots from Smith Paul, which was a nephew of John Paul Jones, and Risa Paul, my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, from Scotland. They lived among the Indians. Smith Paul married Elatika Moshokchu, my great-great-great-grandmother. He was an Indian chief. He led the Indians from Mississippi into Indian territory and founded Paul's Valley, Oklahoma. And they grew corn and they had fields and they had great farms and ranches there too. They were not wild Indians. They were civilized Indians. History doesn't tell you that now. He fought the annexation of Texas into the Union as a slave state. He didn't want that. He didn't want to extend slavery, and yet, against the Indians, it was like a double standard here. The banks, the federal bank, you get Bank of the United States, Jackson disbanded. He did not believe that American people's monies ought to be in some other banker's hands. Because they knew that people could be bought off and politicians could be paid off. Because not every politician is an upright man, as we should know. They called him Martin Van Buren, or Martin Van Ruin, because of the crash in his time. Because of his decision not to annex Texas into the Union, the Southern Democrats fought him hard. Southern Democrats was the most conservative part of America, by the way. The Southern Democrats would be turning over their grave 1,000 times for the Democrats that we have today. And the problem with the Democrats today, the Southern Democrats became Republicans after the man that killed Kennedy. We have JFK and we have LBJ, a criminal. LBJ destroyed the Southern Democrats and they fled into the Republican Party. And even he did some good things, but mostly he was a criminal. Martin Van Buren was a lifetime politician. His family had come here from the Netherlands in 1631. Abraham Van Buren, his father, had been a patriot in the American Revolution. He owned a tavern. And in that tavern, Martin Van Buren grew up, speaking several languages. His home language was Dutch. It was not English. But in the tavern, he learned how to deal with people and learned how to compromise to some extent. He studied Latin. He studied Greek in the seminary in Claverack. He learned English in school, not at home. He was a small man in his time. He was about 5'6" tall. And they called him Little Van. Yeah, you have to realize that some of these guys, George Washington, and of course the one coming up sooner or later would be Abraham Lincoln, a very tall man. Thomas Jefferson was tall. And we have Little Van. He graduated from law school. And he graduated from law school. He didn't cheat on his tests like Mr. Biden. He didn't commit perjury and plagiarism either. He was a real guy. This was a real deal here. He rubbed elbows with a lot of the political giants of his time. He was acquainted with some of the greatest military leaders of his time, Andrew Jackson and Winfield Scott. He was for the construction of the Erie Canal. Connect Lake Erie to the Atlantic Ocean, which he thought was a good idea. Martin Van Buren's allies tried to influence him to block that because they didn't believe that America ought to be big. We shouldn't have built roads. We shouldn't build dams. We shouldn't build canals or anything like that. They thought that was outside the Constitution. He used newspapers to spread his views. He used political parties and politics and Tammany Hall and the Albany Regency, the political machines of his day, to propagate what he believed. He believed in voting laws. Now you have to realize that during this time that not everybody in America could vote. Not every white man could vote in America, and no Indians could vote, and no blacks. When we fought the Civil War, it was not to give the rights to the Indians to vote. The Indians didn't have a right to vote until after World War II. For some reason, we've always been left out. Martin Van Buren wanted every white man to be able to vote. And he tried to expand state voting rights to white men in 1821, and that's white men without land. Unless you were landed, unless you were a landowner, you couldn't vote. And no women could vote. No women could vote. That's out. Only landed men, so only if you had land and you were a citizen. Of course, we ought to be citizens. We ought to be a citizen to vote. That ought to be a law, which it is. But now they're trying to make it a non-law. He inherited in Washington the era of good feelings when the political parties were not fighting like they are today. Today it's a war. They called him the little magician and the sly fox because he could take from the conservatives to the liberals and kind of make way with all of that. He could just kind of make things okay. They liked each other. One of his great absolute heroes was Thomas Jefferson, and he got to meet with him. He got to meet with Thomas Jefferson, and he loved that. And he tried to adapt a lot of Jefferson's ideas into what he believed. He was what we might call acquainted with Henry Clay and Cassius Clay. They were cousins, I believe. But he was always trying to give American residents, male American residents, freedom and a what we might call a voice in American government. So that was where he was really good. One of the things that haunted him was the tariffs. The tariffs were so high that we could not export our stuff because of the high tariffs coming in. And so that in many ways was not good for the American economy. Martin Van Buren was Andrew Jackson's vice president. They tried to get rid of him one time. Calhoun was a scoundrel, John C. Calhoun. And Andrew Jackson appointed Martin Van Buren to Great Britain as a minister over there, as a representative. And Calhoun said, and he was going to cast a negative vote, where they would not make Van Buren the minister to Britain. And a minister confirmation vote, Vice President Calhoun of Andrew Jackson, he thought he could get and completely do a rid of Martin Van Buren altogether. He did not like him. He did not like his views. So he passed a negative vote as vice president to kill him being the representative of Great Britain. And said, these are his words, it will kill him, sir, kill him dead, and he will never kick, sir, never kick. And Van Buren was already in London. And he had to come back home. But Van Buren did kick. President Andrew Jackson was so mad that the next time he ran for president, it was not John C. Calhoun as his vice president, but Martin Van Buren. John C. Calhoun had destroyed John Quincy Adams' whole ministry as president of the United States. And now he was going to try to destroy Martin Van Buren, but in the end, it destroyed him. One time, Henry Clay was absolutely delivering a harangue about Jackson's tyranny, likening him to the worst of the Roman emperors. Now, this little guy, Martin Van Buren, was a real sly, funny character. Back in these days, in the Senate or in the House of Representatives, there might be a duel or a fist fight. My cousin, Homer Paul, went into the Senate and got into a fist fight and waylaid a man because he was a liar in bringing charges against my cousin as Senator of Oklahoma. And Homer Paul worked him over. Haskell Paul did the same thing. These are my family. Well, now, here Henry Clay is haranguing Andrew Jackson and, of course, Martin Van Buren. He left his seat and approached Clay as all the senators watched. Is he going to pull a knife, a gun? What's going to happen here? He goes over there. This is a funny thing. You know what he said to him? Can I have a pinch of your fine snuff? Can I have a dip of your snuff? And the tension was completely diffused, and everybody was smiling and happy. Now, they continued to be political opponents, but they were friends from then on. You can get along, people. The Big Five never tried to get along with Trump. All they wanted to do was destroy his whole presidency. And the Democrats never laid down. But the Democrats won't say one word. What I say one word about the election being stolen. And they cried about it for 4 years being stolen, and it wasn't. And now it has been stolen, and we can't object. Or we're radicals. The panic of 1837 came along. That's like the Great Depression. After President Jackson refused to recharter the Bank of the United States. He placed federal funds in state banks, which had the benefit of not having the power to manipulate electoral officials and elected officials on the scale that they do today. But the banks got into some irresponsible land speculations, and like we had here after 9/11. Of course, President George Jr., paid off the criminals, and we suffered, those that lost everything. He had the specie circular, an executive order mandating that all those who wanted to purchase land from the American government had to pay it in gold or silver coin and not in printed money, which could be manipulated. They couldn't deal freely with promissory notes. Promissory note is a promissory note, people. It's nothing. The Trail of Tears was his dark part of his whole character, his whole tenure as president. He removed 20,000 Cherokees from plantations that they had built. And 50% of them died on the Trail of Tears. Neither Andrew Jackson nor Martin Van Buren helped remove them safely. They didn't have any plans. They just wanted to get them out and get the white man in on their lands. And when you talk about white man, we're talking about immigrants into America. All of them were immigrants. Davy Crockett, Ralph Waldo Emerson, all of those screamed to Martin Van Buren, look at these people. Take care of the people. You've taken their lands. At least make it safe for them to go someplace or else give them their lands. You know, some of the Cherokees never even left the land in Tennessee and Georgia and North and South Carolina. They stayed on. What happened on the Trail of Tears? Many Indians were poisoned. Many Indians were starved to death, froze to death. Disease, infected blankets with smallpox. Some writers said, oh, well, he didn't mean to kill these Indians. They didn't really intentionally mean to kill the Indians. You know, later on, Sherman said the only good Indian was what? A dead Indian. You have to remember this. The blacks are hollering for equality and equity today. If any people were ever abused and mistreated by the American government, it was my people, the American Indian people. But I'm 1/32nd Scots, and proud of that. And I'm proud to be an American. And people, we need to learn to love America first, and our Constitution first. The destruction all us Indians have today, and that's bad English, but all us Indians have today is the United States to protect us from the rest of the world. Yeah, well, there ought to be some equality here someplace. I'll tell you one thing. My great-great-grandfather Samuel Eichard Paul was the first United States Indian citizen. He could vote. He was senator also. His children, grandchildren, were lawmakers. And he was killed, murdered, assassinated while in office. And he was the chief of the whole Chickasaw Nation. And it was stolen out from underneath him by politicians. There would still be Indianola in America today if Sam Paul hadn't been killed. A lot of times, Indians, we have to change our ways to coexist, and that's what he tried to do. He tried to settle all the problem with the annexation of Oklahoma and the taking of American Indian lands with the Dawes Act, which was nothing but the thievery, and most of the Cherokee Indians would not sign the Dawes Act. If Martin Van Buren, if Andrew Jackson had done what they should have done and protected the American Indians in their lands, they could have expanded America all over the place without leaving this black, dark history on the American government. Martin Van Buren tried to administer conservatively public works into America. He tried to build up America infrastructure. You know, the Republican or the Conservative Party at that time, and which they were called the Democratic Republicans, but now, after Martin Van Buren, it's called the Democratic and the Republicans. We have two parties. The two-party system that we have today, we got from Martin Van Buren. He did a great deal of damage to the American Indians, but he tried to do everything he could for the country. He had a terrible callousness when it came to his understanding of the plight of American Indians. But he left us with a lot more foundation than many presidents have ever done. He tried to keep the public money safe from the politicians in his time. He tried to keep the public money safe. He tried to appoint deputies and people that would be honest in the distribution of the tax money in the states. taxpayer funds will only be subject to discreet, what we might call conservative, open, clear workers. It should be clear where that money went. It should be clear what the money does. And that's what he tried to do. If anything in public works was done, he tried to make sure it went to where it was supposed to go. Our modern leaders should think about this man. Every Democrat should think about this man and what he stood for. Every Republican ought to be thankful for what he did and how they worked together with the other parties. But the Depression ruined him, and then William Henry Harrison took his place. Our Father, we send this message out as we try to work with this country and as our people all over the world try to work with their countries, that you'll help our people to understand where we came from and where we're going. That's very important. And Father, we thank you for Romans, the 13th chapter. We thank you for the places in the world where your people can safely congregate and preach your word. And Father, I thank you so much for all of the students you've given me all over the world, from Nancy in Pennsylvania to New Wales, New South Wales, to Australia, to New Zealand, to the Philippines, to China, India, Wales, Donald Grewar, all of these people that you have used far away to understand your word and to spread it where they are.